Chapter 6. They managed to sneak back to Hutao unnoticed by anyone who might challenge them, but their luck runs out when they get back to the guest quarters. Wangxia is waiting for them, pacing in the light of a single lantern. Deng Ar is at the table, head pillowed on her arms, fast asleep. Wangxia still stands when he sees them. His expression is stony, but his eyes are aflame. "Welcome back," he says, saccharine and deadly. "I arrived some hours ago, hoping to share an evening meal. Imagine my surprise when Deng Ar let me know you were otherwise occupied." Hearing her name, Deng Ar stirs. She sees Tang Fan and Sui Zhou, and her lips immediately tremble into a frown. Her eyes are red. "I take it, from your appearance, that your mission was unsuccessful?" "Wangxia," Tang Fan starts urgently, stepping forward. "Do not Wangxia me," Wangxia spits, arcing up. "You are here to help me solidify my position as governor of this outpost, not incite another war by invading the enemy's stronghold." Tang Fan bows his head, cowed, but no less desperate to deal with the revelation of Duarla's continued existence. He's exhausted, bones sore from galloping all the way back to Hutao without stopping, and his very soul feels as though it's been wrung out like a wet rag. He has very little face left to save in front of Wangxia, but he swallows down his tears regardless.
"I hope Wangxia Fu can find it in his heart to forgive these unfaithful ones," Sui Zhou says calmly from behind them, no hint in his tone of anything less than complete sincerity. "We have come back with intelligence relevant to the current Oirat political climate."
Wangxia raises an eyebrow, seemingly unimpressed. "It's Duarla," Tang Fan blurts. "A Shurtamore's Dorbet prisoner, it's Duarla!" Wangxia's expression of scorn freezes for a moment, then smooths over into impassiveness.
"Duarla Jia?" Deng Ar asks, voice wavering. "She's alive?"
Sui Zhou goes to her, grips her shoulder firmly.
"Yes, Tang Fan saw her."
"Are you certain?" Wangxia's tone is impenetrable, his expression blank as a mask. Tang Fan nods, sinking into a stool next to Deng Ar. He wishes he could lay his head on the table as well.
"What are you gonna do?"
Deng Ar asks, staring at Wangxia with shocked tears gathering in her eyes. Wangxia stares at Deng Ar for long moments, frowning, then blinks rapidly and looks away.
"You should rest. We'll discuss it over dinner tomorrow evening."
He walks briskly to the door, then throws a glance back over his shoulder.
"Don't make me lock you in here this time."
The door closes quietly behind him, and Deng Ar starts crying softly. Tang Fan is sure that if it weren't the middle of the night, she'd be much louder. As it is, she tucks her face into Sui Zhou's shoulder sleepily as he crouches next to her. Tang Fan feels a sudden longing to do the same. Sui Zhou's expression, when he meets Tang Fan's gaze over Deng Ar's bowed head, reflects a similar mix of grief, shock, and longing for comfort.
"There," Tang Fan says, reaching out to stroke Deng Ar's hair gently, thinking of her look of guilt when she'd seen them just now. "No harm done. You were right to tell Wangxia where we were."
"Duarla Jia,"
Deng Ar cries softly.
"Why didn't you bring her back?"
Tang Fan swallows around a lump in his throat, tears suddenly a lot closer to the surface.
Suezhou's face is distraught.
Wu Yin is with her now,
he says gruffly.
She is safe.
Deng Er sobs weakly for a little while, crying herself to sleep against Suezhou's shoulder. Seeing her curled up there, Tang Fan's heart can't help but see her as a child instead of the young woman she's growing into. Who comforted Deng Er when she was a child? He thinks of the scissors she gave Suezhou to ward off his nightmares, and his chest aches. Carefully, Suezhou slides his arm under her knees, scooping her up to carry her to her bedroom. When he emerges again, he holds out a hand to Tang Fan, where he's slumped at the table.
Wangxia is right,
Suezhou says hoarsely.
Rest. Then we can figure out how to get her out.
Tang Fan lets himself be pulled up gently into Suezhou's arms. He rests there for a moment. Suezhou's arms around his shoulders, his own resting loosely against Suezhou's waist. Suezhou's oirat clothes smell like horse and leather, and faintly like Suezhou's own sweat. He buries his face into Suezhou's shoulder and shakes a little as Suezhou's gentle fingers stroke through his hair. Eventually, Suezhou steps back and starts tugging him towards his bedroom.
Come on.
He lets Suezhou undress him. He's too weary and heartsore to be aroused by it, and Suezhou seems no different. He wraps them into bed together, and Tang Fan is grateful, so grateful for his presence and his strong arms, holding Tang Fan together as he falls asleep. Tang Fan wakes groggily to the sound of soft voices outside the room. That wasn't what woke him, though. Behind him, Suezhou is panting, rough and uncontrollable. It's too vulnerable a sound for him to make while he's awake, so Tang Fan rolls over to face him, as slowly and carefully as he can. Suezhou is lying on his back, jaw clenched, and the tendons in his neck corded. In the dim sunlight coming through the screened windows, Tang Fan can see Suezhou's eyes move rapidly under his closed lids. His brow is screwed up as if in pain. Tang Fan wants nothing else but to reach out to him, to soothe him. But he's been on the receiving end of waking Suezhou from a nightmare before, and so has Deng Er. It would be worth it, except the crushing guilt he knows Suezhou would feel for it. So he waits, watching, curling his hands uselessly against his own chest. After an eternity, Suezhou's harsh breaths cut off with a gasp, and his eyes fly open. He stares up at the ceiling for long moments until his chest stops heaving, then turns his head to blink at Tang Fan sleepily. As soon as he does, Tang Fan reaches for him, pressing into his side, stroking his hand down his chest. "Will it help if you tell me about it?" he whispers, desperate for something, anything, that will take the haunted look out of Suezhou's eyes.
"I wake up in a pile of bodies,"
Suezhou rasps, his voice rumbling under Tang Fan's hand.
"Everyone around me is dead. Everyone I love is dead."
He pauses, and Tang Fan watches the fan of his lashes over his cheeks as he closes his eyes again.
"It's my fault."
Tang Fan wraps even tighter around him, clinging. His heart is breaking, remembering what he'd said to Suezhou after Dwarla had been killed, how he'd twisted that knife. "It's not your fault," he tells Suezhou urgently, far too late. Suezhou smiles at him softly. Tang Fan gets the distinct impression he's not convinced. He reaches out to brush hair off Tang Fan's face.
"Thank you,"
he says kindly. Tang Fan doesn't know what else to do. He tries one of his newest strategies. He lifts himself up on his elbow and dips his head down to press his lips to Suezhou's. Suizhou sighs into it, his fingers slipping into Tongfan's hair, cupping the back of his head. They're both more than a little seedy, but the longer they kiss, the less Tongfan cares, reveling in the hot cling of Suizhou's lips against his, their combined smell wreathing around them at every shift of the heavy bedding. Their kisses roll back and forth between them like waves, growing with tidal intensity until Suizhou rolls Tongfan onto his back and presses down heavily. He moves the hand he had on Tongfan's backside down to his thigh, hooks Tongfan's leg up over his own hip. Tongfan stretches into it, the feeling loosening some of the heartache that had knotted tight in his chest since he saw Dwarla. Suizhou watches with warm eyes as Tongfan arches, then sinks back into their soft bed with a sigh, restless.
"What do you want to do?"
Suizhou murmurs, stroking his hand down the back of Tongfan's thigh. His own leg is pressed up between Tongfan's, and Tongfan is very aware of its proximity to his half-hard cock. Tongfan tilts his chin up, and Suizhou takes the hint to continue kissing him. It warms Tongfan further, sadness and pleasure twining together between his ribs, bittersweet. Dwarla sits on his conscience like an itch he can't scratch, an itch he wants to dig his fingers into and gouge down to the bone, as though that's the only thing that will give him any relief. Tongfan curls his foot around the back of Suizhou's thigh as Suizhou's hand strokes up to palm his backside again. "Does it hurt?" he asks, the next time Suizhou lifts his mouth away to breathe. He's not sure how else to raise the subject, even though Suizhou had just asked. Burning like banked coals in the back of his mind has been the memory of what they did last time, of how magnificent Suizhou had looked, taking his pleasure, how enraptured. Suizhou props himself up a little higher, creating enough distance that they can look at each other. He gives a small smile.
"Not if you do it right."
He watches as Tongfan licks his lips, then presses them between his teeth nervously.
"Do you want to do it again?"
"No," Tongfan blurts. "I mean, yes, absolutely. But what I mean is..." He cuts off his own babbling by lifting his head to shove his lips against Suizhou's clumsily. He clutches the back of Suizhou's neck, pulling him more on top of him. The pressure eases the itch in his mind, at least a little. "I want to try," he says at last, murmuring it into Suizhou's neck, then biting him there, only lightly, but enough to release some of his nervous tension. Then he pulls away, unsure. "If you want to do it that way..." In the books Tongfan had read, one party was always the giver, the other the receiver. But Tongfan has decided to approach every future encounter with Suizhou as if those books are mostly lies. He's reassured when Suizhou groans, pushing forward into the cradle of Tongfan's hips and hitching Tongfan's leg up higher. Tongfan sucks in a sharp breath at the suggestiveness of it.
"Yes,"
Suizhou breathes.
"Yes, Runqing, yes, I want to."
Tongfan feels fluttery with relief at the enthusiastic response, even as something skitters with nerves around the aching weight in his chest. "Are you sure?" he asks, teasing.
"Very sure,"
Suizhou answers seriously. "All right, just..." Tongfan takes a deep breath, closing his eyes and trying to steady his racing pulse as Suizhou starts to press light kisses to his throat. "Be gentle." He gives an embarrassing yelp as Suizhou bites down on the angle of his neck, hard enough to bruise, though not to break the skin through his undershirt. Tongfan smacks Suizhou's shoulder, but he's laughing through the outrage. "Brute!" Suizhou is grinning when he props himself up above Tongfan again, and Tongfan's heart surges with warmth. He hadn't thought he could laugh, but here he is, smiling right back at Suizhou. Sui Zhou leans over, stretching above Tong Fan to reach for the side table, and returns with a pot of ointment. Tong Fan is starting to accept the fact that he is never going to be able to look Pei Huai in the eye again. Sui Zhou rises to his knees, lifting up their furs and blankets as he goes, and shrugging them off his back. Tong Fan helpfully kicks them to the foot of the bed. Then Sui Zhou places the pot near Tong Fan's hip and starts on the ties of Tong Fan's undershirt. Tong Fan immediately sits up and reaches for him in return. His mouth is flooding with saliva at the thought of seeing Sui Zhou naked again, an instinctive response. Arousal rises to shoulder everything else out of its way, forcibly taking up space in Tong Fan's mind and body. He welcomes it, lifting his hips as Sui Zhou gets to work on his trousers as well, pulling away the last of Tong Fan's underclothes before swiftly divesting himself of his own. Tong Fan is fully hard and hasn't even been touched. His self-consciousness has been discarded along with their clothes, the remnants of grief and anguish shoved into a forgotten corner of his heart. He reaches greedily for Sui Zhou's cock as soon as he's back against Tong Fan's side, and Sui Zhou pushes out a harsh breath, hips flexing into Tong Fan's hand as he licks back into Tong Fan's mouth. He nudges Tong Fan's legs apart with his knees again, pinning one of Tong Fan's down with the weight of his muscled thigh, and reaches down to stroke Tong Fan's cock lightly. They linger in the moment, touching each other eagerly and trading wet, messy kisses. Sui Zhou's hand on Tong Fan's cock is teasing, playful. It's building a great sense of pressure in Tong Fan's body that makes him squirm and thrust. When he feels like he can't take it anymore, desperate for a stronger, hotter grip, Sui Zhou breaks off the kisses and removes his hand entirely. Tong Fan whines, and then, outrageously, Sui Zhou is shifting down the bed, moving out of reach. He brushes Tong Fan's legs apart with firm hands on his inner thighs, and Tong Fan's stomach lurches. He braces for Sui Zhou to move his touch further back. He had touched himself last time, so he must be going to. But Sui Zhou just settles down between Tong Fan's legs and reaches for his cock again. Then he looks up the length of Tong Fan's body, as if to check if Tong Fan is watching, and lowers his head to take Tong Fan's cock between his lips. Sui Zhou's mouth has become familiar territory, but this is something different. The dark plushness of it, so much wetter on Tong Fan's cock, so much hotter. Tong Fan shudders, trying not to push up and choke him. He shoves the heel of his palm into his own mouth, biting down hard against the cries rising in his throat, rawer and louder than they should be. Sui Zhou starts a lazy rhythm, sliding his lips down over Tong Fan's cock until they meet the grip of his fingers, then stroking up as he pulls his mouth off again. Tong Fan can't look away, mesmerized. And after a moment, Sui Zhou shifts his position, bringing his other hand up. Tong Fan feels Sui Zhou's fingers stroke over the sensitive skin of his balls, rolling them gently before slipping down lower. His knuckles drag more firmly against the smooth skin behind them, sparking sensation through Tong Fan's belly. And then the pads of Sui Zhou's fingers stroke lightly against the entrance to Tong Fan's body. The muscles in Tong Fan's thighs tighten, jerking his legs against Sui Zhou's shoulders. And Sui Zhou glances up again, freeing his mouth.
"Okay?"
he asks Tong Fan hoarsely. Tong Fan nods frantically, teeth still sunk into his hand. Sui Zhou gives a twitch of a smile, then hoists Tong Fan's knees up over his shoulders. Tong Fan hears the sound of the ointment pot being uncapped. Then a few moments later, Sui Zhou's fingers are back between Tong Fan's legs. Heat shivers through Tong Fan at the slick touch, against the most secret part of himself. In contrast to the gentle pressure of his fingers, Sui Zhou turns his face into Tong Fan's inner thigh,
rubbing his rough beard against the thin skin, nipping lightly with his teeth. His eyes are closed as if in concentration. Tong Fun whimpers at the contrasting sensations, then crosses his ankles behind Sui Zhou's back. His toes curl at the first breach of his fingertip, but Sui Zhou doesn't wait for Tong Fun to adjust, just keeps sliding in. It's far from unpleasant, which a part of Tong Fan's mind had feared, but it's definitely unfamiliar. Tong Fan isn't quite sure yet if he wants to squirm away from the intrusion or welcome more of it in. When Sui Zhou takes hold of his cock again, it becomes less of a mental problem to solve and more simply one of controlling his body. Sui Zhou slides another finger in, alongside on the instroke, and Tong Fan groans into his own hand at the stretch, teeth biting down into the flesh of his palm as he cants his hips up.
Good,
Sui Zhou asks, voice rough. Before Tong Fan can answer, Sui Zhou is ducking his head down to lick moisture from the tip of Tong Fan's cock. Tong Fan throws his head back into the pillow, then cranes it forward again to glare. Hurry up, he whispers hotly, removing his hand from his mouth. His jaw aches. He can't tell how many fingers Sui Zhou is using on the next push in, just that the burn of it feels huge, the initial sting heating into a delicious pressure that spikes when Sui Zhou curls his fingers. I'm ready, Tong Fan pants, something desperate and hungry in him. He reaches for Sui Zhou with grasping hands. Sui Zhou takes a beat too long, and the delicate balance Tong Fan has struck within himself teeters. He flushes, feeling exposed when Sui Zhou withdraws his fingers and reaches for the pot of ointment again. Suddenly untouched, the feelings Tong Fan had managed to push aside flood back to fill the emptiness. His breath hitches a little, and Sui Zhou looks up, then kneels upright when he sees Tong Fan's expression. Tong Fan's legs slip back down to fall open on the bed. Tong Fan bites his lip, inexplicably missing the feel of his own hand in his mouth, the grounding of the pain. He grips a fistful of the bed covers self-consciously.
Guang Chuan, you're very far away,
he makes himself say before Sui Zhou can ask the question. He's convinced what's wrong, right now, would instantly undo the control he's tenuously holding on to. Sui Zhou's expression softens. He moves forward again, crawling up Tong Fan's body to rest his weight over him, to kiss him again. Tong Fan opens for him hungrily, skin prickling with relief at the generous touch of Sui Zhou's body over his. If Tong Fan clutches at his back a little too hard, Sui Zhou doesn't mention it. Tong Fan welcomes the arousal that flows back in to smother his unease, and once the rhythm of Tong Fan's body has fallen back in sync, Sui Zhou lifts himself a little to look into Tong Fan's eyes again.
There's another way we can try,
he says hesitantly, then huffs in amusement at the expression on Tong Fan's face.
I'm still going to fuck you,
he adds reassuringly, his voice a honey salt growl. And Tong Fan feels inflamed by the crudity of it. Sui Zhou is no poet. Tong Fan is grateful for it. The shield of metaphor feels flimsy and inadequate right now. Show me, he says, releasing Sui Zhou from the wrap of his arms. Sui Zhou shifts to the side to lie on the bed facing Tong Fan, then gently guides him to turn over. Tong Fan's heart races in his chest, but Sui Zhou doesn't let him lie fully on his belly, instead helping Tong Fan prop himself up on his side. Tong Fan feels a little lost at first, until Sui Zhou presses the length of his hard body up against Tong Fan's back, grounding him. He tucks his hand under Tong Fan's knee and folds his leg up, then smooths his hand slowly back down the inside of Tong Fan's thigh before rubbing over the tender opening to his body again.
Better,
Sui Zhou murmurs, breath hot against Tong Fan's ear,
tucking his face in against the side of Tang Fan's throat as his fingers press against sensitive skin. Tang Fan reaches back, feeling Sui Zhou's powerful thigh, and grips it to pull it forward, slotting against his own. "Much," he says. "Are you ready yet?" Sui Zhou laughs at the challenge, soft and voiceless. The bravado works. Sui Zhou adjusts his leg briefly as he grasps his own cock. Then, as Tang Fan takes another breath, he's pressing the slick tip against Tang Fan's body.
"Breathe,"
he instructs, and starts to sink inexorably inside. Tang Fan has to turn his head to bite into the pillow, the sensation forcing sounds from his throat that he can't swallow down. Sui Zhou is big, so big. Tang Fan had seen him, touched him, admired him. To feel him cleaving him open is another thing entirely. There's a primal sense that he's going to be destroyed, and something deep in him keens in relief at the thought.
"Tang Fan, Run Qing,"
Sui Zhou is whispering urgently, trembling against Tang Fan's back.
"Talk to me."
Tang Fan groans breathlessly, flails his hand back to grasp the thick muscle of Sui Zhou's backside and urge him forward. Sui Zhou gasps and thrusts in hard, fucking the breath right out of him. Sui Zhou is on him, in him, all through him. He's so big, he's so much. He's invading Tang Fan's body, taking it over, and all Tang Fan wants to do is surrender.
"Sorry," Sui Zhou pants. "Sorry."
Tang Fan wants something in his mouth again. He releases his hand from its grip on Sui Zhou's flesh and reaches up instead to grasp a handful of his hair, yanking him forward and arching his own neck back to capture Sui Zhou's lips in a messy kiss. Sui Zhou draws his hips back a little and thrusts home again. Tang Fan clutches at Sui Zhou's hair, crying out into his mouth.
"Is it all right?"
Sui Zhou asks breathlessly. "Yes," Tang Fan gasps as Sui Zhou drives forward again. "Yes, yes." Tang Fan is unfathomably grateful that Sui Zhou had shown him that first time just how good it would be. He might not have been brave enough otherwise to give in to the pleasure of it, to the immensity of feeling, the way it takes over, burning everything else to ash. Sui Zhou slides his arm under Tang Fan's neck and folds it across Tang Fan's chest, locking his body in close. Tang Fan trembles in pleased helplessness at the constriction of it. He braces his forearm against the bed, pushing back and gasping. At the feel of Sui Zhou's tender inner arm against his cheek, he turns and sinks his teeth into it, feeling Sui Zhou's bicep flexing against his tongue. Tang Fan could devour him. Sui Zhou would let him. At this angle, Sui Zhou's thrusts are shallow but devastating. Tang Fan muffles his noise in Sui Zhou's tender skin, but the sound of their bodies colliding sounds loud in the small room. When Sui Zhou reaches around to grasp Tang Fan's cock, Tang Fan nearly slams his head back into Sui Zhou's face. It only takes two fierce strokes of Sui Zhou's fist before Tang Fan is coming, the feeling incredible as he clenches uncontrollably around Sui Zhou's cock, his body seizing, then bucking wildly. Sui Zhou rides him through it as though he's lashed to Tang Fan's back, in him and around him and never letting go. When Tang Fan goes limp in his arms, his grip loosens and he moves to withdraw. Tang Fan grabs the arm across his chest, pushes his hips back. "Don't stop," he gasps. "Stay, stay." Sui Zhou kisses his neck roughly, withdrawing his arm enough to direct Tang Fan's face towards him. His kisses are sweet, the thrusts of his hips hard, his cock continuing to stroke a fierce, burning pleasure into Tang Fan, even as his spent cock softens. Sui Zhou's breath is coming too hard to kiss anymore, so Tang Fan tips forward to show him the vulnerable back of his neck.
He hooks his hand under his own knee and pulls it to his chest, arching his back to angle his hips to meet Suejo's thrusts, never wanting it to end. Suejo makes a pained sound, then he's rearing up. His fingers are bruising on Tongfan's hips as he slams into him for a few final, almost violent strokes. He cries out and buries his face in the back of Tongfan's neck, breath almost sobbing as he spills hotly, buried deep. Tongfan shakes under him as the heaving of Suejo's chest slowly calms. He feels like a coast that's been stripped by a violent storm, like a wave has crashed over and destroyed everything in its path. He feels scoured clean. He feels bereft when Suejo pulls gently out of him, then fragile as rice paper when Suejo gently helps him onto his back. Suejo looks as wrecked as Tongfan feels, but he still sucks in a pained breath when he sees Tongfan's face. "Don't you dare apologize," Tongfan orders as he drags his wrist over his eyes. He doesn't know what's wrong with him. He can't stop shaking. Such pleasure is supposed to leave him feeling relieved and sated, his mind pleasantly blank. Instead, everything Tongfan has tried to crush down has spilled out messily, like a split bag of rice. He could cry at the unfairness of it. Suejo reaches for the blankets at their feet, pulls them up to wrap around them, not caring about the mess. He holds Tongfan's face in his hands, thumbs brushing away the dampness at the corners of his eyes. What comes out of Tongfan's mouth is, "How did we not know she was alive?" The breath Suejo takes sounds painful, as if it is Tongfan who has just managed to scrape away every calloused bit of scar tissue that's grown around Dwarla's death, and not the other way around. Of all the consequences for being fucked, this was not one Tongfan had anticipated. On top of his confused grief is a layer of guilt. Suejo doesn't deserve to have to clean up the emotional puddle that moments ago was his lover.
"What matters is that she is alive,"
Suejo says, his own voice rough. He lies down on his side and curls into Tongfan's body. His arm is heavy and warm across Tongfan's chest, and his fingers stroke the crease of Tongfan's elbow, a painfully tender gesture that has Tongfan's breath hitching in his throat.
"We will bring her home."
Wangxia doesn't come for dinner that night. The silence as the three of them eat around the table is taut with anxiety. Dengar leaves for bed as soon as she's finished eating, and though Tongfan feels as though he should be wide awake after spending most of the day asleep, the heaviness of his eyelids speak otherwise. He dreams of Dwarla blown apart, her blood soaking the packed earth road under the Xuanwu gate. Tongfan crawls through it, trying to find and gather up her body parts, but there's nothing left. Suejo is lying awake next to him when Tongfan opens his eyes, staring glassily at the ceiling. He startles when Tongfan touches him, though without violence. Tongfan wonders if he slept at all. Still, they curl into each other in silent comfort. It's late afternoon on the second day when there's a knock on the door to the guest quarters. Wangxia never knocks. It's a servant requesting Tongfan and Suejo attend the governor's receiving room. Dengar sits back down with an exasperated huff as they leave. When they reach the door, Suejo holds Tongfan back before they can enter. Tongfan looks at him curiously, then blinks. He should have kissed Suejo before they left their guest quarters. Suejo's eyes have dark smudges beneath them, and his brow is pinched.
"Runqing, whatever happens, we will get her back,"
Suejo tells him earnestly. Tongfan swallows, nods fiercely. "I will fight Jia Kui if I have to," he says. And the humor works.
Sui Jo huffs in amusement, face softening. He squeezes Tang Fan's shoulder. The closest they can be with the guards standing on either side of the door as witness. They enter to find Wang She seated at the table at the head of the room. Two rows of empty chairs face each other in the open space in front of him. Gao Yi is standing at the front of the room, one arm folded behind him and the other on the hilt of his sword. His expression is inscrutable as he watches them approach. Wang She is smiling ominously. Darans, Wang She apologizes for keeping you waiting, Wang She starts with. He is not usually so formal when he tells them unequivocally that he will not use his influence for their personal gain. Then again, he doesn't usually receive them so formally when offering them help under the table. Tang Fan feels a sickening mix of hope and dread. Gao Jiangjun and I have been conferring with those we represent and believe we may have a solution that will benefit both Ming and Oirat.
We are eager to hear it,
Sui Jo says. He must be. Usually Sui Jo can be relied on to stand back and let someone talk themselves to death before he even opens his mouth. Wang She tilts the side of his mouth up, nods slightly in acknowledgement. A marriage would be the most effective solution, he says. Tang Fan frowns. You brought us here to tell us you are doing nothing to stand in a Shittimore's way? On the contrary, Wang She says, unfazed. We propose a union between the Oirat and Ming. It is the ideal solution to both further our mutual goals and to solve your problem at the same time. You propose to marry Dwarla off? Tang Fan scoffs. To who? Wang She's smile is steady. She is the daughter of the former Dorbet chief, so ideally someone with a connection to the Ming royal family, but not so close as to affect the dynastic bloodline or any existing political arrangements.
Someone from a strong military family to demonstrate Ming's commitment to moving on from the conflict of our past,
Gao Yi adds gruffly. Tang Fan laughs incredulously. I would not have guessed you two were matchmakers, he says, just as Sui Jo says, in a voice rough as the teeth of a saw.
I'll do it.
A strange feeling runs through Tang Fan's body, like all his blood is being sucked out of his extremities and into his core. There is the weight of a boulder on his chest, painful and restrictive. He stares at Sui Jo, speechless. Sui Jo stares straight ahead. Gao Jiangjun has arranged for us to meet with the Dorbet tribe leader, Wang She continues, as if Sui Jo hasn't just uttered the most outlandish words Tang Fan has ever heard. I have exchanged messages with the Forbidden Palace. The Empress Dowager will not object to the union. Wang She! Tang Fan bursts out at last. This is outrageous. You can't simply decide a man's fate without so much as... Tang Fan. Wang She says, his smile patient, like he's speaking with a child. You asked me to provide a solution, and with Sui Daran's agreement, we have one. Do you object? Wang She speaks the last to Sui Jo directly. Sui Jo shakes his head.
I do not.
Tang Fan's disbelieving laugh this time is without voice, shocked out of him. Arguments rise up in his throat, but at Wang She's condescending expression, he slams his teeth shut against them. Abruptly, he can't stand it anymore, to be in this room with these men who watch him with such calm expressions on their faces. With all the dignity he can muster, Tang Fan wheels around and storms out of the room. He doesn't stop until he reaches the outer doors, staggering through them into the courtyard. He sucks in great lungfuls of chilly air, abruptly shaking. He should have brought his cloak, but of course he hadn't thought he would need it. Inhaling deeply through his nose, he makes himself stand up straight,
then continues in a march across the empty courtyard and through to the outer gate. He will freeze then, if the heat of his outrage fails to keep him alive. The Falling Leaves Inn has not changed since Tang Fan was there a few weeks ago, but everything feels different. He remembers seeing Dong Er and Wu Yin as he entered after he and Sui Zhou had met with Wang Shi. The roasted lamb had been delicious then. Now the smell of it makes his gorge rise. He lifts his robes a little to climb the stairs as quickly as he can. Jin San had retained the small room they'd rented alongside the bigger room at the back of the building, and Tang Fan hammers his fist on the door twice before pushing his way in. Jin Xiong, have you eaten? Tang Fan cuts himself off with a shout of surprise and slaps his hand over his eyes. Tang Fan! Jin San shouts angrily. Tang Fan whips around so his back is to the bed, willing himself to forget the tangle of naked limbs he just saw. Sorry, I'm sorry, I knocked! Jin San curses him. Of all the rude, inconsiderate... There's the sound of clothing hurriedly being put on, and when Tang Fan hears the soft sound of a woman clearing her throat behind him, he peeks over his shoulder curiously. Qinga is standing next to the bed, dress loosely tied and hair in disarray. Jin San is sitting on the edge of the bed, trousers undone but decent, and shirt clearly recently thrown on. He glares at Tang Fan ferociously. Qinga, Tang Fan says, embarrassment and surprise forgotten in a rush of joy at seeing her.
Tang Fan,
Qinga replies, her mouth pressed in barely concealed amusement.
I would join you downstairs for a meal, but, well, I shouldn't be seen here.
Tang Fan's heart drops. Before he can open his mouth, Jin San is sighing loudly and standing up, setting his clothing to rights with swift, jerky movements. He shrugs on his jacket and brushes roughly against Tang Fan's shoulder as he passes. I'll be back in an hour, he says threateningly, and slams the door after him. Qinga smiles warmly.
It's good to see you, Tang Daren,
she says, straightening the blankets and sitting down, patting the bed next to her. Tang Fan rushes to her side. When he gets there, he finds he's at a loss for words. So much has happened since they saw each other last. I didn't expect to find you here, he blurts out, the new information he'd learned moments ago struggling to find a suitable filing spot in his brain. Qinga huffs a quiet laugh.
I have been spending more time here than Wang Daren would like, she says softly. Although he cannot fault my results, so there's little he can say about it.
She sounds as though she's feeling out what Tang Fan might say about it. Perhaps once Tang Fan would have said something, even if just a stir for gossip. But now? Qinga, Dorla is alive! The color drains from Qinga's face, her lips parting in shock.
Jin San said you found someone unexpected on a mission, but never did it cross my mind. How?
Tang Fan shakes his head. I don't know how, but I saw her. She's been kept prisoner by Ashurtamore for who knows how long. Qinga's fist clenches on her thigh.
I'm coming with you to get her.
Tang Fan grasps her wrist as if to stop her from standing and marching out then and there. Wang Shi has a plan, he says, words catching in his throat as he says it. He'd forgotten, for a moment, the scene in Wang Shi's receiving hall, like some strange dream. You don't need to endanger yourself. It's testament to how much she already must know of Wang Shi's skill that she heaves a relieved sigh. She places her free hand over Tang Fan's.
Tang Fan, she must be so lonely,
she says, voice thrumming with heartache. It hadn't even occurred to him. All he'd been able to think about was getting her back. Wu Yin is with her now, he says.
Not for the first time, he wonders what had happened after Wu Yin surrendered. He hopes that Ashutamore's strategic diplomacy, such as it is, extends to Wu Yin's well-being.
I'm glad.
Tinga squeezes his hand again, then lets go. She stands up, paces, rubs her hand over her face, then turns back to him.
Are you all right? Jin-san said you were missing. I was worried.
The varying ways in which Tang Fan is not all right feel too immense to put into words, even in his own mind. He nods at Jinga, smiles. I am all right. I just want her to be home. Jinga gives him a soft, anxious smile.
Send news to me. You can always pass it through Jin-san.
Tang Fan nods and stands. I'm glad to see you are well, he says. And, he can't help adding, taken care of.
Jinga smiles ruefully. You really should wait after you knock,
she reprimands gently.
Please give my regards to Sui Daren and Deng Er. I miss them both.
Tang Fan feels a fist clench around his heart. He bows his head to her briefly. I will. I am sure they miss you as much as I do. Tang Fan isn't hungry anymore. Perhaps he never was. He wanders the streets and attempts to avoid the food vendors as he does, though a number of them call out to him in recognition. The cold creeps in, all his limbs feeling wooden, just a tough core at the center of him keeping him moving. He knew this would come to pass eventually, that Sui Zhou would have to fulfill his filial duty, certain as morality. Tang Fan had expected to have more warning, more time to get used to it. He hadn't expected it to happen here of all places, so far from the capital. And he can't resent Sui Zhou for what they've shared, for Sui Zhou taking comfort in another warm body. Tang Fan had theorized that this was where Sui Zhou's experience came from, his years in the military, working so closely with his brothers in arms in such horrific circumstances. He's fiercely glad Sui Zhou had that when he could. Tang Fan's frozen body is betraying him. There is a lump as hard as stone lodged in his throat, where the rest of him is numb. It's incredibly inconvenient. When swallowing it down doesn't seem to work, he tries to crush it into dust through sheer force of will. Seeing Jia Kui appear in front of him is a welcome distraction. Tang Fan scowls as he approaches. You will have to carry me again before I will come with you, Tang Fan tells him waspishly. Jia Kui gives the briefest smirk, just a twitch of his mouth. He takes Tang Fan's arm, though not as firmly as Tang Fan anticipated. And then, instead of yanking him back towards the governor's residence, he turns Tang Fan around and walks him in the opposite direction. Surprised, Tang Fan doesn't resist, and Jia Kui leads them up the steps of a tavern Tang Fan has passed by 3 times already, but resisted due to the sickening smell of cooking spices. Jia Kui pushes him down to sit at a table, then returns again with a steaming bowl in his hands. When he places it in front of Tang Fan, the fumes rising from it are potent. Not food, but alcohol. Hot spirits, with the faintest touch of spice. Jia Kui raises his eyebrow in challenge. Tang Fan pouts sullenly, picking up the bowl to cradle it in his hands. It is much warmer inside the tavern, and the heat through the ceramic feels glorious against his cold fingers. Hesitantly, he takes a sip, nearly choking as the potent brew burns his throat on the way down. He manages to suppress a cough, but not the water that squeezes out at the corners of his eyes. Jia Kui doesn't comment, politely looking away under the guise of examining their surroundings. When he looks back, Tang Fan is in perfect control. He takes another sip, better prepared this time. Then another. By the time he puts down the empty bowl, the stone in his throat has been dislodged.
It sits in his sternum, aggressively present, even as the rest of him is starting to feel loose and uncaring. I suppose we had better get back to them, Tong Fan says at length, sighing. Jia Kui looks at him, expressionless.
They have already left by now.
Left? Tong Fan's voice is louder than he intended. Jia Kui nods, looks around again, leans in closer with a lowered voice, raising his eyebrow as if he's confused as to why Tong Fan needs an explanation.
To meet with the Dorbet chief?
Damn, Wangsha. Tong Fan had been stupid to think that Jia Kui was sent to fetch him back, that it was pity that made him drag Tong Fan to the tavern. With Tong Fan's performance at the reception room, of course Wangsha was eager to keep him away from any formal premarital negotiations. And Sui Zhou would have gone with them, of course. Jia Kui pushes another full, steaming bowl across the table. Tong Fan hadn't even noticed him get up. He pulls the bowl towards himself greedily. Jia Kui nearly does have to carry him back in the end. Tong Daga! Deng Er cries when Jia Kui deposits him back into her care. Where have you been? Sui Daga left hours ago. Tong Fan flaps his hand at her, slumping forward to rest his head on his arms. She leaves for a moment, returns with a basket of freshly steamed pork buns. Sui Zhou's recipe. Tong Fan shoves them into his mouth, the pillowy dough not unlike the cushion of numbness the alcohol has swaddled around him. Tong Daga, Deng Er says after a while. I think you've had enough. Tong Fan looks up at her with a betrayed glare, cheeks full. Deng Er has never cut him off before. She would never, just as he would never deny her. She looks tired, though, concerned. Why didn't you go with them? She asks softly. Tong Fan swallows, painfully. Sui Zhou mustn't have told her. He reaches for the bowl of water, trying to wash the food down. Maybe Deng Er was right. He feels sick. Sui Daga is getting married, he says. Deng Er's expression is a mix of confusion and shock. Will we still be allowed to live with him? She asks, her voice too small, too young for the woman she's grown into over the past few years. Tong Fan wishes he could comfort her. I don't know, he says, miserable. He remembers what he told Pei Huai, marvels at his past self-assurance. I am a governor. I can afford to rent a room now. Deng Er seems to take heart from this. He is much richer than Lao Yu was. Of course he can afford a housekeeper. He is rich enough to afford as many concubines as he wants without having to move out of the city. Tong Fan feels sick. He has eaten too much and drunk too much. He lurches to his feet and stumbles to his bedroom. It's cold inside. He hasn't spent time in here for days. It feels like a dusty archive of his former self. He crawls into bed and heaves the blankets up over himself without even taking his boots off. He's vaguely aware of Deng Er following him in, chattering nonsensically, just noise through the furs pulled tight around his head. It does get a little warmer, though. She must have lit the stove in the corner of the room. His limbs start to relax as the chill gradually melts away. Tong Fan comes awake sluggishly at the feeling of someone shaking his shoulder. The watery daylight has gone, replaced by orange lantern light. Sui Zhou is sitting on the edge of his bed. Tong Fan groans, rolls over to crush his face into the pillow. Are you married yet? He asks petulantly. The feel of Sui Zhou's hand disappears from his shoulder.
Runqing, of course not.
Oh, I thought you would be, since you seem to be in such a rush. Sui Zhou's silence makes Tong Fan's gut curl in on itself sickly. He can count on one hand the number of times he's spoken to Sui Zhou cruelly. He wants to cut off those fingers,
even as his words echo through the room bitterly.
Tong Fan,
Sui Zhou says at last, and he grips Tong Fan's shoulder again, this time pulling until he rolls over onto his back. His expression, when he looks down at Tong Fan, is pained.
This doesn't mean we can't.
Can't what? Tong Fan spits, the feeling he's tried to smother all day, with food and drink and cold burning up through his chest. He can't call it jealousy. He can't envy something he never had. If anything, it feels like grief. The same fresh rage he'd felt fighting Sui Zhou in the smoke under the Xuanwu gate. Oh, but of course, Sui Doran can afford to keep as many concubines as he wants. Sui Zhou inhales sharply, shock or hurt. Tong Fan doesn't let himself think about it. Sui Zhou's hand tightens painfully on his shoulder, gives him a slight shake.
I would not.
He starts, voice rough. Then his grip loosens, as if he's deliberately trying to calm himself.
It is not going to be that kind of marriage,
he states carefully. Tong Fan pushes his hand away, struggling to sit up. Not going to be that kind of marriage? What kind of marriage is it going to be, then?
Tong Fan.
Sui Zhou's tone is almost begging, and Tong Fan hates it, hates how it makes him feel. He shoves it down.
This is politics,
Sui Zhou says.
This is for Dwarla.
Politics? You would damn her to a loveless marriage for the sake of politics? Tong Fan laughs humorlessly. If the sound is a little uncontrolled, it's because it's fueled by his rising outrage. The feeling is almost comforting in its familiarity. I thought better of you, Sui Zhou. You would treat our friend, who was killed because of us, as a political pawn for Wangsha's ends? Dwarla deserves better. Sui Zhou's face hurts to look at, but Tong Fan can't tear his eyes away.
You're right, Sui Zhou says. She does deserve better, but there's nothing else I have to offer.
He stands abruptly.
The Dorbet chief is coming to He Tao to complete the negotiations tomorrow. You should be there. Dwarla deserves someone present who has her best interests at heart.
He leaves, sucking all the air out of the room with him as he closes the door gently behind him. Tong Fan falls back to the bed, reeling. He can hear the sound of voices outside the door, as if from a distance. Deng Er and Sui Zhou talking softly, and the clink of ceramic as they lay the table. It must be dinner time. The pork buns and the oirot alcohol still churn in Tong Fan's gut. He has never had less appetite in his life. He rolls to put his back to the door when there's a gentle knock at it, refusing to move even when it opens, and Deng Er asks softly,
Tong Daga?
Her footsteps enter the room, and there's the quiet sound of her setting something on the table.
I brought you wontons. Aren't you hungry?
Stubbornly, Tong Fan remains silent. She must know he's awake, though.
Sui Daga says that, of course, we can still live with him. That we can all live together. Like after we came back from Yunhe, while Dwarla was recovering from the poison. Only this time it's forever. You should have told me it was Dwarla Jia he's marrying. Tong Daga?
Tong Fan's heart aches. He thinks, perhaps, the only thing worse than having to move out of Sui Zhou's home will be having to live with Sui Zhou's wife. Deng Er sighs.
They're your favorite wontons, she says a little petulantly. You shouldn't let them go to waste.
The door closes behind her, and then all is silent again. The Dorbet chief, Bat Bayar, is barely older than Deng Er, probably younger even than Wang Shi, Tong Fan thinks. He's flanked by older advisors, and Tong Fan can't help but seethe silently at them as they sit in one of the rows of chairs in Wang Shi's reception room. Wang Shi himself is opposite, with Sui Zhou and Tong Fan seated on either side. Gao Yi sits on the Oirat side, though a little apart.
here as a representative of the Khan. Tang Fan hates them all for allowing this to happen to Dwarla, for doing nothing for an entire year, apparently, for letting it come to this.
She is Batu Khan's daughter,
Gao Yi says,
cousin of his successor. Usher Tamor would be sabotaging his own efforts if he refused to let Bat Bayar Bey see her.
We should do things properly and send word ahead, Bat Bayar says uncertainly. That would only give him an opportunity to move her, Tang Fan points out, somehow managing to keep his tone polite. If he hasn't already, since the last time.
He has, Wangsha says, and looks to Gao Yi pointedly.
Gao Yi nods. Our scouts brought back word that the camp's defenses are being dismantled.
Tang Fan clenches his fists on his thighs. There are cutting words on his tongue. But before he can speak, Sui Zhou does.
It may be better for us to find them on the road, he says. Then there can be no accusations of uninvited visitors.
Bat Bayar is practically sweating in his seat. One of his advisors clears his throat.
Bat Bayar Bey is eager to honor the generations of prosperity the Dorbets have enjoyed as part of the Tsoros clan, he says.
Wangsha bows his head.
His Majesty is also looking forward to the Ming's relationship with the Tsoros being celebrated in such a fruitful way.
It takes everything in Tang Fan not to turn to Wangsha and scowl. Everyone in the room is watching Bat Bayar expectantly. With one last faint nod from one of his advisors, he announces, If Gao Jiangjun is willing to assist us in locating Usher Tamor and my cousin, then I will accompany and formally present you to her in an offer of marriage, he says to Sui Zhou. Sui Zhou stands and bows, Wangsha not far behind. Tang Fan hurries to follow. Sui Zhou speaks, something Tang Fan can't understand. He's speaking the Oirat language again. Whatever he says, Gao Yi gives him an understated smile of approval, and Bat Bayar looks as though Sui Zhou has just served him his best minced noodles. Tang Fan feels as though the entire conversation might as well have been conducted that way. He has the distinct feeling of standing outside a house and staring in. Wangsha and Sui Zhou see the Dorbet delegation out, and when they return, Wangsha is still smiling smugly.
You will meet with them to set out tomorrow, he tells Sui Zhou. Chen Jiangjun will accompany you.
He looks Sui Zhou up and down speculatively.
It's a shame you didn't bring your armor. You do take such good care of it.
I'm not a soldier anymore,
Sui Zhou says stiffly.
Wangsha shrugs. I suppose it is all for the best. We have moved on from the war. That is what this union is all about, after all.
He turns to Tang Fan.
And you, Tang Daren, I have a job for you.
Tang Fan frowns. Another mission, in parallel to this one? Are your... Sorry, Gao Jiangjun's intelligence gatherers not enough?
Oh, they are perfectly sufficient. Wangsha smiles. Your talents are needed here in Hetao.
Of course, Tang Fan will not be allowed to go. Sui Zhou shows no sign of distress at the news, his expression as flat as a statue's. So Tang Fan resolves that he will not either. His excitement at finding Dwarla alive has mutated into something else. As overjoyed as he remains at her existence, he's not sure he wants to see her. They part ways, Sui Zhou leaving to prepare for his journey, Tang Fan following Wangsha. Wangsha leads Tang Fan through the house and to the cellar. From the smell of damp earth, it seems it was only recently dug. They walk in torchlit silence through a short earthen tunnel. Then, when the passageway opens up again, Tang Fan finds that they're in the subterranean chamber Wangsha had first met them in when they arrived. It gives Tang Fan the same feeling of unease now as it did then. Thing Rong is already sitting at the table, looking just as wan and expressionless as the last time Tang Fan saw him. Wang Shi gestures for Tang Fan to sit. There's a pot of tea on the table, steaming faintly through the spout, and Wang Shi holds back his sleeve to pour for the three of them. Jia Kui takes up his usual position behind his right shoulder. Tang Fan wonders bleakly if the best path for him now might be to become one of Wang Shi's indentured criminals himself. Before Wang Shi has set down the teapot again, Qingge is emerging from the doorway on the opposite side of the chamber. Dressed in men's clothing, she takes off an enormous hat as she enters. Her smile to Tang Fan is muted. She bows towards Wang Shi.
Wang Daren, she says. Things are proceeding to plan. They have received intelligence on the party leaving tomorrow. They have noted that Chen Jiangjun is taking his most loyal men.
Excellent, Wang Shi says, gesturing for her to join them at the small square table. She sits between Wang Shi and Tang Fan, placing her hands neatly in her lap.
Qingge has been observing a group of rebels since you joined us in Hetao,
Wang Shi explains, pouring a cup for Qingge.
From the intelligence she's gathered, we believe they are planning something for when Chen Jiangjun has left Hetao. Given that they are also relying on Chen Jiangjun taking a party of his most loyal soldiers with him, we assume there are colluders amongst the Ming troops stationed at the fort.
That isn't all, Qingge says softly. There is evidence that they have been working with the Oirats as well.
Tang Fan feels a frown tighten his brow, and he glances between Qingge and Wang Shi.
A shirt to more?
Wang Shi tips his head in acknowledgement.
Sui Doran's mission will solve more than one problem.
Tang Fan almost laughs. Of course the whole situation is even more entangled in Wang Shi's scheming than he thought it was. He should have known that from the start. He'd been too blinded by his own emotions to see Sui Zhou's engagement for the thread that it is in Wang Shi's greater tapestry.
Ding Rong has been examining all the official memorandums that leave the settlement,
Wang Shi explains. Ding Rong nods.
They have been in communication with someone in the capital, most likely the Ministry of War. We are yet to determine the identity of the recipient, though the rest of their cipher is laughable.
That's who's leading them? Someone at the Ministry of War? Tang Fan asks. Wang Shi nods.
I thought you would appreciate having something to work on when you get home, he says. But for now, we need to subdue the insurgents here as swiftly as possible.
Tang Fan glances around at the four of them. And for this, you sent Chen Jiangjun away? He sees Qingge share a glance with Jia Kui.
That's why you're here, Tang Fan,
Wang Shi says expansively.
To solve this in a way that won't simply incite more resentment.
Tang Fan stares at him for a long moment. He thinks of Wang Shi's old adage, that he will help anyone who helps him. Tang Fan, who feels like he's been steeped in bitterness for days, struggles to find equality in this exchange. But that's selfishness talking. Qingge is at his side, as free as she is ever likely to be. Dwarla will be wrenched out of Ashutamor's grip in a way that means she never has to return. And Wang Shi doesn't deserve to be destroyed by another petty power play. Even if Tang Fan didn't believe with his heart and soul in the law of the Ming, his friends still need him. He turns to Qingge and Ding Rong. I need to know everything that you know. Do you have paper? Write it down and send for Deng Ar. It's Deng Ar who finds the real hidden plan amongst the laughable cipher and weeks of intelligence Qingge has gathered through eavesdropped conversations. There are dual missions for the insurgents. One for the Oirats and their party to invade the governor's house and slaughter Wang Shi and his bodyguard, sparking unrest between the Ming and the Oirat. Two, while the distraction is drawing many of the soldiers away, infiltrate the fort. Jinga had seen them examining plans, identifying the general's office, mapping routes of entry and exit.
It must be for the deployment maps and strategic plans, Wangsha deduces. There is no weaponry. Every soldier on the fort knows where the armory is.
If they took them, though, surely it would be discovered immediately on Chen Jiangjun's return, Tang Fan points out. Unless they mean to copy them.
Wangsha meets his eye. They have enough time. Chen Jiangjun will be away for days.
And with only rebel soldiers left in the fort, they will be perfectly safe, Tang Fan adds.
Wangsha smirks in agreement with Tang Fan's acerbic tone.
They make their own plans swiftly. The days are short this far south, and they are rapidly approaching nightfall. Jinga will return to the streets, both so as not to blow her cover and to collect any intelligence throughout the following day. Tang Fan and Wangsha, while making it visibly known they are still at the governor's residence, will utilize the secret tunnel to the fort with Ding Rong and lie in wait in Chen Yue's office. Jia Kui will defend the pretense of Wangsha at his residence, keeping up the ruse for as long as possible. And Deng Ar will spend tomorrow night at the Falling Leaves Inn with Jin San. Deng Ar frowns. I can fight! Wangsha gives her a genuine smile, sympathetic.
Deng Ar, I might be able to handle Tang Daren being angry at me.
He spares a glance at Tang Fan, who frowns in confusion.
But even I am scared of Sui Daren.
They part ways again. Jinga leaving the way she came, and the rest of them returning to Wangsha's residence through the secret tunnel. While Deng Ar heads off immediately to speak with Sui Zhou, Tang Fan finds himself lingering in Wangsha's study. Wangsha raises an eyebrow at Tang Fan, waiting.
Wang Daren, why do you believe I am angry with you?
Tang Fan asks carefully.
Wangsha laughs.
Tang Fan isn't sure why he entered this conversation, expecting to soothe Wangsha's hurt feelings. He scowls, and Wangsha claps a hand on his shoulder, still grinning.
Ayo, Tang Fan, you have been looking as sour as an unripe cherry since I married off your Xiangdi.
He speaks the last in a teasing tone. Tang Fan flushes, self-conscious and irritated. Wangsha observes the blush, mouth twitching. Of course I am displeased about that. Dorla is my friend. She doesn't even get to have a say in it? Tang Fan asks stiffly.
Tang Fan, Wangsha says, his cheeriness softening into something that looks,
to Tang Fan's horror, more like pity. He turns to face Tang Fan directly.
I understand marriage poses a huge disruption to your household, but if I'm sure of nothing else, it's that Sui Zhou did not make this commitment with the intention to change anything between the two of you.
Tang Fan rears back, feeling his chest puff out as he sucks in a deep breath. Wang Daren, I don't know what you presume to understand.
Wangsha waves his hand, turns away. Tang Fan, there is nothing to protest.
He sits behind his desk, smoothing out a fresh piece of paper before glancing up.
You'd best go spend this time on your farewell.
Tang Fan huffs, stamping his foot a little as he turns and sweeps out of the room. For Wangsha to think he understands anything about Tang Fan's household is naive at best, at worst an insult. When Tang Fan gets to their guest quarters, Deng Ar is sitting at the table, eating fresh-baked cakes, arranging them on the plate in front of her in pleasing patterns. She looks up when Tang Fan enters, still fuming.
He's in his room, she says.
Tang Fan doesn't pause outside to fortify himself, because Sui Zhou's door is already open. Sui Zhou is packing a bag. He looks up when Tang Fan marches into the room and carefully sets down what he's holding. He turns to face Tang Fan, hands lightly bracing on the edge of the bed behind him. The bed they had shared, where Tang Fan had thought, had felt,
What did you tell Wangsha? Tang Fan demands. Suizhou blinks, his expression confused.
About?
He saw fit to comment on what was between us. Tang Fan spits, waving his hand between the two of them. Why would you tell him? Suizhou's face is drawn, mouth downturned.
I told him nothing.
Because it is nothing. Tang Fan seizes on his words, chews them up, spits them back at him. Suizhou's mouth is open, speechless. His hands grip the edge of the bed.
Tang Fan, he says breathlessly. It's not nothing, it's...
He lurches forward, hands reaching. Tang Fan shoves him back, his heart huge in his chest, too big, too painful, constricted by the cage of his ribs. Do not try to humor me, he shouts, almost a sob. You said you wanted this.
I did, Suizhou looks devastated. I do.
Then why are you getting married? All the anguish Tang Fan had been holding down pours out his throat. Suizhou slumps back against the bed.
You know why, he says, voice hoarse. It is the best thing I can do for her. And for Ming, the only thing. And Tang Fan, it means...
He stands up straight again, steps towards Tang Fan with blazing intensity in his eyes. Tang Fan stumbles back, hands up, and Suizhou stops. Tang Fan has never seen that expression on his face before. Marriage is supposed to be about love, Tang Fan blurts, voice breaking on the last word. Suizhou is standing very still, watching him very closely.
I'm sorry, Runqing, he says softly. It is an admirable ideal, but it is not the way of things.
But you said... Tang Fan's words come out a sob. He's crying now. He drags his sleeve across his face angrily. You said doing the right thing with the right people is what is important.
I did. Suizhou says, looking close to tears himself. I am. Tang Fan.
Tang Fan steps back, drawing himself up, trying to regain at least some of his dignity. Sui Baihu, if we can't even agree on this, then I think perhaps... He stops abruptly, has to force the words through the tightness in his throat. Perhaps I should find another room to rent when we return to the capital. Suizhou stares at him, face pale.
If that is what you truly want,
is what he says,
barely above a whisper.
Tang Fan can't take it anymore. He turns, almost stumbling as he storms back through the open door into their receiving room. Deng Er is still sitting at the table, and she stares at him, aghast, her own eyes brimming with tears. Tang Daga, she cries. But Tang Fan can't even look at her. He keeps his own momentum and shoves through the doors, leaving their quarters entirely.